Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my fantastic co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how is your week going so far?
Well, always a great week and always looking forward again to another great podcast as we continue to get great guests, and today will be no exception.
Agreed. And there seems to be a theme going on here throughout the last year. We meet really good people, and then all of a sudden, magically, they introduce us to other really good people. So with that said, we are honored to welcome Caitlin McGregor, CEO and co-founder of Plum, to the podcast. Caitlin is passionate about helping people reach their true potential. After building two businesses for others, she founded Plum to help organizations harness human potential by matching employees' talents to roles where they'll thrive, and in turn, enabling businesses to thrive. She's a sought-after speaker at global events like CES, HR Technology Conference, and Women Connect, and has been featured in such outlets as the New York Times, the Globe and Mail, and Human Resources Executive. Caitlin is also a Gold Globie Women World Awards winner for achievement in innovation and was named an inspiring leader by Inspiring Workplaces. Caitlin, so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too. And before we dive in, I got to give a quick shout out to the amazing Jason Putnam, who's been on the podcast twice, and he's been singing your praises since we met him about 2 years ago. So I'm thrilled that we can finally sit down and have this conversation.
I'm very lucky to have Jason on the team.
Yeah, he's great. Well, let's get started. Let's talk about your company, because I've gotten to know a little bit through yourself and through Jason now. But Plum started really as a hiring tool, but has since evolved into a comprehensive talent platform. Can you walk us through that journey that you went through and share some of those pivotal moments that shaped its evolution?
Yeah. So I built two businesses before starting Plum. And at the second business, I was hired as the US president to go down and start up the US branch of a Canadian ed tech company. And I went to make my first hire, and my executive coach said, Caitlin, if you screw up that first hire, it's going to be a loss of $300,000 on the business. So not wanting to make that mistake, I ended up using a psychometric assessment, so a behavioral and cognitive assessment, on every single person that applied for the job. And it was a very expensive consulting service that required hours of interpretation, but I was really benefited from having this data on everybody. And two candidates stood out for totally different reasons. There was this guy who was perfect on paper. He had a master's in education, 5 years of relevant work experience. My CEO back in Canada was drooling. This was the golden boy by every measure, except for his assessment showed he had a mediocre work ethic, but he was hired anyway. And then I had this other person who scored in the top third percentile of the entire population for overall productivity at work. And statistically, I was told she was 1 in 1,000 and I'd be an idiot not to hire her. So I ran an experiment, hired the guy that was perfect on paper, hired the woman with the highest assessment scores. And 3 months later, the guy's fantasy football team was doing really well, but he was only doing 10% of his work. The woman was doing all of his work plus hers. And within a year and a half, she had replaced me as acting president while I went on maternity leave. And the punchline is that she had two art degrees and her only work experience had been 7 years of waitressing. And she didn't even know how to use Excel. So if I had relied on a resume, there's no way I would have interviewed her, let alone hired her. And for the next 3 years, the same things kept happening. We just kept hiring these incredible diamonds in the rough that the assessment screened in. We never would have looked at if it wasn't for this data. So we started Plum after being our own customer for 3 years and seeing an opportunity to really democratize access to this highly predictive data. This is all, you know, decades of industrial organizational psychology, but it has always been trapped with these consultants. So we started Plum to turn it into software as a service, create a really amazing user experience, and be able to scale the data. And that's what we've been able to do over the last 13 years.
That's really interesting because coming up, and we're coming into our 20th year of us running a business, me, Al, and Joe, and we've all run into those situations where someone did look really good on paper, and maybe you hire them, and maybe they work out, and maybe they don't. And then you run across someone in a completely different field, and you think, wow, I'm going to take a chance on them. And they end up being really, really good. And I'll take that even one step further. You know, we talk to a lot of chief people officers, VP of people on this podcast, and we have found very successful people that have come from very non-traditional roots. I mean, one person I'm thinking in particular came from a music background, and yet she excelled on paper. She shouldn't have. So, I mean, what would the message be to companies like ours, companies who are listening to this, is how much further should they dig into this? Because again, there's a war for talent right now. We all need great people to thrive and grow our companies. But how much stock should they really put into this? Because again, if someone looks great on paper, they have all the education, shouldn't they be able to just come in and do the job? Because that other person who doesn't have the experience, you really are taking a chance. So what would you say to that, Caitlin?
I'd say that we all need to pause and really look at what is 2025 going to look like for companies. And the reality is generative AI is impacting all of this in a way that if we were having this conversation 3 years ago, my answer would actually be different. Because the reality is that the job candidates are using Gen AI to be able to get through all of the filtering software that's being used on the company side. And so what's happening is that using technology, applicants can basically look the same. They can say, here's the job description, here's my resume, give me a personalized cover letter and a resume that checks all the boxes so that I get into the interview. So the question is how are companies shortlisting who's getting into that structured interview? And behavioral data and cognitive data is 4 times more accurate than those keywords and the inferred keywords that are on the resume in the first place. So this is the time to start using the most reliable data that actually predicts productivity and quality of hire and retention, because this is what allows somebody that once they've learned on the job to outperform their peers long term. The second thing with generative AI is that time to learn is dramatically being reduced. The ability for somebody to upskill. So a great example is we work with an organization that trains people in 4 months to be a cybersecurity analyst. There's 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity roles in the world. And in 4 months, these people can become cybersecurity analysts. Well, Plum is selecting who's getting into the program. And 60% of the people don't have any IT or technical background whatsoever, but they have the behavioral fit. They have a high attention to detail, high adaptation, very innovative. So they have the raw components to excel in that. And so now that that time to learn is really being shortened thanks to how easy it is to democratize the learnings needed, then we really need to say what differentiates one person from a next. And we should be focusing on, you know, who's going to outperform and stay longer in the job as a stronger factor. And 10 years ago, maybe didn't need to. I would say it was broken 10 years ago as well, but we definitely don't have a choice. We need to start looking at the more predictive data. And we have the tools now where it's an amazing candidate experience, amazing experience for your employees. They benefit from this. They want data on themselves to help them differentiate and stand out. So the fact that it is scalable, affordable, great user experience, there's kind of no excuse not to.
Caitlin, I know Al's going to jump in here, but before I forget, I'm going to make an introduction for you after this podcast, especially what you said about AI helping upskilling people very quickly, you know, over a 4 month period, because we did have someone who's in cybersecurity and that's what he cited. He said there's so many unfilled job positions for those jobs right now, including for him. He's looking for that. So I'm sure he'll be very interested in chatting with you. So I'll make sure I do that.
I appreciate that.
Caitlin, you've used the word democratize a couple of times now, and I'm just curious, you mentioned at the very beginning that this was kind of a, I'll use the word proprietary piece of software, if you will, that it was hard to get your hands on, you had to spend a lot of money. It sounds like that would be a big undertaking to go from what was to what you've been able to achieve now and put it in the hands of more people. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, this is an interesting journey. And I don't think I realized that we had this unique perspective until I was reflecting more recently. So my co-founder, Neil, we were running the educational software company before starting Plum. And the educational software company was to help students with learning disabilities how to succeed using technology in school. And so his job as the global expert in training the students and the teachers and the parents on these kids is that they all have IEPs, individual educational profiles. So if you have kids with a learning disability or know anybody with a learning disability, it starts with getting this really robust psychoeducational assessment, which is a psychological profile on the strengths that the kid has and the things that are just harder and are making it more difficult for them to succeed. And it's actually the gap between those strengths and the areas that they're struggling with that gives the diagnosis. And so Neil would have to go in and work with grade six students to get them to understand their unique learning profile first and foremost before they understood the technology that could support them, before knowing the compensatory strategies they needed to bring in to support their journey. It really started with self-awareness. So when you start dealing with these 30-page, 60-page, really in-depth psychological profiles, and you're trying to explain it to somebody who's 12 or 11, 10, like, you end up finding out how to explain this in a really intuitive language. And when we were having consultants explain these really complex psychological profiles of these job applicants, we were like, you don't need a magic decoder ring. Like, yes, there is over 100 years of science behind industrial organizational psychology. In the last 30 years, we have gold standards. And yes, I can see why consultants want to keep their jobs and the PhDs want to, you know, be worthwhile, but people have a right to understand their own profiles. And so there was an opportunity to take kind of that intuitive way of understanding a kid's psychoeducational profile and getting a job seeker and an employee to understand their profile. And so the biggest thing that we did was just take best practices, the gold standard in industrial organizational psychology, and make it understandable. The breakthrough, first and foremost, is how to take something, you know, in our first few years, we would talk about industriousness and orderliness and intellectual disposition, and it would require lots of explanation. Well, now we talk about innovation and adaptation and conflict resolution and execution and things that are really intuitive and easy to understand. We don't talk about good or bad. We talk about what drives you and gives you a sense of self-worth and what drains you. And you can do, but just takes you longer and more energy and more effort. And if you spend 80% of your time on it, it drains you. So a big, big kind of aha with all of this is how to make this data, which is super predictive and important, how to make it accessible to the individual and benefit the individual first and foremost before even making it applicable to the employer. That was the biggest thing. The second thing was, okay, now that we can make the individual understand the data, how do we scale it? So there have been lots of assessments that have focused on high volume assessments at the beginning or executive assessments at the end, but the middle of the organization where you have the greatest amount of people in roles, the messy middle, that really had been untouched, because it would be too expensive to bring in consultants to explain everything or to customize for these roles that have less applicants or less employees. So everyone was ignoring the messy middle. So we wanted first to have something that people could intuitively understand, but then two, that could scale to match every person to every role and every role to every person.
So would you say that when you realized that, would you say that was your aha moment when you realized that you could go beyond hiring to transform how organizations approach talent?
I think the bigger aha moment, which really caught us by surprise in a way, is that we were about 8 years in and we had three, and we were dealing with SMBs, you know, small, medium-sized businesses and some mid-market, but we had three large enterprise companies all come to us in about 2018. And they said, this is great that you're helping companies match candidates to roles. And, you know, they were piloting, they were having success, but they're like, you know what we really need? We really need this data on our employees. One was going through an upskilling initiative. One was going through a reorg. The other one was trying to double down on employee development and trying to make the employee be empowered to guide their learning journey. And they said, can we try your product on our employees? And like any good entrepreneur, I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So we spent a year shoehorning our talent acquisition solution for these three customers. And all three of them had amazing success with talent management. And so that was a moment where it's like, oh my goodness, for us, it doesn't matter if it's an employee or a candidate, or it doesn't matter if it's campus recruitment or if it's executive level. Like for us, it's all the same data. It's the same accurate predictability. So we're like, there's a bigger opportunity here to really take what we meant about scale to the next level and take this data across the entire employee lifecycle from every use case in talent management that you could think of. And so I went out and raised our first institutional like venture capitalist round, and we built purpose-built for enterprise and purpose-built for talent management to have one data set from hire to retire and launched that. And the launching happened in early 2021. And that to me was like, that unlocked the whole next level of the business. That's where we're like, we undeniably can do something that's never been done in this industry, scale at the enterprise level, full end-to-end platform solution. And that was definitely a big later stage aha that really was a game changer for us.
So it sounds like you've got a tool that can not only help people or help organizations hire the right people, but also look at their existing people and identify people who have potential to move into different roles or to upskill or to do anything that might enhance their career. Where would you say you're seeing, is it fair to say, the more success? Like, is it on the hiring side or is it on the developing with current employees?
Well, it really depends on the market. So in 2021 and 2022, when launching talent management was still new for us, I would say hiring by far was taking off and being the biggest reason people would knock on our door. But when we would show them that the exact same data could be used for their employees, a lot of them were at the beginning of their talent management journey and they bought the whole platform. So they may have bought us for talent acquisition, but by the time the contracting was done and they got started, they may have actually started with talent management. So it ended up being the whole package of that ability to take the data anywhere they needed it was the most appealing. What we found is that in the last year, 2 years, talent management is a newer area that companies are spending more effort and interest on. So we're getting a lot of interest on the talent management. And now that we've won a lot of awards in the industry and gotten a lot more recognition for talent management. So we're seeing that pipeline be the strongest it ever has been. And I think that companies, again, are recognizing that they need to understand the human behind the work. If they're going to increase that productivity that everyone's after, if they're going to increase that retention, they need to be supporting their employees in a new light and ideally getting it to be led by the employee. It's not HR just handing everything to people. It's how do you empower your own people to drive, you know, how do you empower them to be the CEOs of their own careers by empowering people with their own data? And so a lot of companies have been seeing this complementary to their trying to become a skills-based organization or complementary to their retention strategies. And we've seen that really pick up in the last year or two.
So I'm curious, and Robin's got another question, but I am curious. You shared earlier an example of two people that you hired and how you used your tool to differentiate between them. Do you have an example that you can share of someone where maybe they weren't being recognized inside the company and then your tool helped them to go on to bigger and better things?
Yeah. So we talk about, this is a real life story, but we changed the name. So we were working with an insurance company and Maya had been an underwriter for 6 years and every talent review came up and she was always deemed to be a top performer, somebody with potential, but she hadn't been promoted. So like most people after 6 years, she was about to leave being like, I need to go elsewhere if I'm going to keep progressing in my career. And our manager and HR were like, no, we don't want to leave Maya. She's amazing. So their instinct was, well, she would be eligible to be a director of underwriting. She had everything she would need on paper to be a director of underwriting. But when they looked at her Plum profile and how it matched to the behavioral needs of the role, they saw that she was only a 66 match out of 100. So there'd be 34% of the population. It would just be a better fit for that role long-term. Because she'd be drained because of conflict resolution and drained because of communication that would be used on a daily basis for that role. But when they looked at other roles in the organization based on the behavioral fit, she was a 95 match for a product manager. Now, Maya had no prior product management experience. So if they were using another platform that was using keywords to understand her past experience and education and look at her hard skills or infer her skills, Maya would never have been matched for a product manager role. But Plum was saying she was a 95 match because her ability to innovate and her ability to adapt and execute were so strong that she was really exceptional. And so what it did is screened her in to having a conversation that they normally wouldn't have. So they interviewed her and they realized that she was really excited about the opportunity to automate parts of her own job, which that product role was going to be doing. She really understood the culture and the customers, and those were all going to be assets. So they hired Maya, and she spent the first 4 months learning everything she could on product management. So taking courses, going into their learning content center, going in job shadowing. And by the 6 month mark, Maya was outperforming somebody that was hired in at the exact same time that had 15 years of prior product management experience, but a much lower match score. And at the 1 year mark, that other person left the organization and Maya actually got promoted to be a senior product manager. So it's just, you know, it's a really amazing. You talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. A lot of us have somebody that in our careers saw potential in us and gave us an opportunity, even though it didn't make sense on paper. And it's so wonderful when you see that you don't have to rely on luck. You don't have to rely on your network and somebody taking a chance on you. There's actually data behind this. And now it's about incorporating it as one of the important pieces in your decision-making. It's not the only one, but it's that the sooner you use it at the top of the funnel, the more you're going to be protecting your precious human hours by talking to the right people and statistically de-risking these bets that you're making on who you're upskilling and moving forward and hiring.
I love that example. And I'm kind of getting goosebumps as you're chatting about this, because there's a couple of things I love about your story and what you're doing, Caitlin. And number one is you're identifying potential. And I'll take you back to my high school days in grade 13. And I was not a great high school student by any means. I don't think there was any expectations that this kid was going to really do much, to be honest. And I remember, I'll never forget this, the guidance counselor trying to talk me out of going to university, because what's the point? You know, your grades are, you know, they just got better in grade 13 and, you know, you haven't really proven yourself. So why don't you just kind of avoid that and all the expense? And the girl I was dating, who I ended up marrying, had belief in me. And thank goodness she did, because I went on to did that. And then by all accounts and measures today have become incredibly successful because a few key people in my life saw potential. And it was when I matched those skills and passions to the right things that I became successful. So I love that Plum has this such a unique approach in my mind, because, you know, we talk to a lot of people, 220 odd episodes now. So I love this. And I know the audience is going to love this. The other thing I've had a chat over dinner with Jason about is, and I know it's a big focus on yours, is focusing on inclusivity as well and making sure everyone has that opportunity to have a seat at the table. So I'd love if you could just chat to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a proud Canadian and this is a really great success story. We have a lot of customers in the US, but one of the homegrown customers is Scotiabank. And in 2020, before the pandemic, they realized that they needed to start doing something different when it came to their campus hires, because they only hired from five elite universities, only finance and business graduates. And what would happen is they go through this lengthy recruitment process, go to make an offer, and the people that they were making offers to met the exact same pattern that all the other banks and consulting firms were looking for. So they were getting competing offers. And so of all the offers they gave, only a small percentage were actually accepting the job at Scotiabank. So they're like, we need to do something different. So they wanted to open up their aperture and go after candidates that the other banks and consulting firms weren't even looking at. So they made a bold move and they decided to eliminate resumes for all their campus hires, for all their co-op and internship positions. And instead, people apply with their one-time Plum profile. So somebody may apply to be a financial analyst and only be a 45 match, but will say that they're a 95 match for commercial banking due to their behavioral fit. So when somebody applies, they are being matched based on that potential, the behavioral fit. As a result, they were able to open up and now they recruit from 33 different colleges and universities. And 40% of their hires are STEM and arts backgrounds. And as a result of this, they've increased their hiring of underrepresented minorities to 60%. And with all of this new talent that they're hiring, they've doubled retention. At the 1 year mark, managers say that they would rehire 90% of the people that they've hired. So just incredible impacts when you get rid of the old pattern matching and you start screening in people and looking at those that are best aligned to the behaviors. Do you need somebody who's going to be communicating or executing or innovating? What's the combination? And we like to think about it. Every business knows the importance of KPIs, key performance indicators, but nobody's talking about the KBIs, the key behavioral indicators. That's what we need to be matching people to. What are the behaviors that they're going to do? And let's be honest, with generative AI, that's what's left. That's what we need people to do. What are the behaviors that they are going to bring to the table? And then how is AI going to enhance all of the administrative tasks around them? Like, I don't need to know Excel formulas anymore. I don't even need to know Python to build a website because I can use generative AI. But what you need from me is thinking outside the box or setting a vision and rallying people behind it. So we have an opportunity to recognize that potential is the most important thing. And it really is about aligning people to the right roles where they're going to excel.
I love that story of Scotiabank. And it's funny, in my world in employee benefits, I have this conversation a heck of a lot with other business owners, because I'm sure you're in different groups and you compare notes and just stories. Employee retention is one of the most challenging things. And when you, depending on the role, when you bring someone on, and whether you're coaching them or one of your team is coaching them, and you look at how long does it take from the time that person starts to the time they become productive in the company, only to lose them. So what a success story to get people in the right role who have those right skills and passions, even if on paper that doesn't look that way. And all of a sudden, you've got a much different looking workforce, right, than compared to everyone else. And you've got a stronger and sounds like more loyal workforce. So kudos to you. I think this episode, Caitlin, is going to draw a lot of, even me just having this conversation, I can tell the DMs are going to be coming in on this one, because I think a lot of people are going to want to reach out and talk to you about this.
Caitlin, can you talk a little bit about what you see for the future, how you see assessments evolving, what role you envision Plum playing in shaping that future, and just how the future work is going to evolve?
I think I probably jumped ahead and been answering that question throughout, which is really, you know, I think we are forced to look at not just automating past processes, but really reinventing how to get the best outcome possible. When we think about what was the purpose of resumes 100 years ago, it was to differentiate people. I don't think resumes are differentiating people anymore. I don't think it's actually helping us predict quality of hire retention. So what we're hearing is organization moving towards being a skills-based organization, but those skills are being pulled out of the keywords from a resume. They're being inferred. Oh, you were a teacher. Teachers do project management. Therefore, as a teacher, the inferred skill is project management. But there's no sense of whether or not they enjoyed that. They were good at it. They excelled at it. And so this game has evolved from resumes and job descriptions to checking boxes, how many keywords in the job description and how many keywords in the resume. And we're just stack ranking that list. If it's our employees internally or candidates externally, we're just stack ranking who are we interviewing that's checked the most amount of boxes. But those implicit biases that give opportunities to some and not others, those are still contributing to which boxes are being checked. And so I think that this is the time where we need to really sit back and say, what do we need the human to be doing in the job? And what are we okay with the computer automating over the next decade? Like, what are the elements that are uniquely human? And recognizing that things have changed. We don't have to pay really expensive consultants to decode things. We have technology that's using industrial organizational psychology to get us that predictive data out of the gate up front. And I think the biggest challenge is that people just don't know that it exists. They don't know that it's evolved. Unfortunately, people still have really bad associations with things like Myers-Briggs, that's more of a cult following and less science. It hasn't been vetted by third party. Like, there is real science behind this and there is real value, but because it wasn't accessible before, it wasn't part of the equation. So I just feel like there's an opportunity to reevaluate from the ground up how we're addressing the outcome. And what's most important, I think it's quality of hire and retention. If it's time to hire and bums in seats, okay, like, yeah, there's faster ways of doing it. But I think that really understanding what is our role as employers, there's a responsibility to help us evolve the workforce over the next decade and taking that as an opportunity to do things better than before.
I do have a question about bias. You've mentioned bias a couple of times, and you know, you've talked about how this predictive analysis is, I'll use the word better, at matching up people to their roles. How do you ensure, though, that there isn't bias built into the predictive software?
Yeah, so this isn't a black box where AI is just learning and pulling together random predictions. Amazon tried building something like this a decade ago, not based on behaviors, but just using AI to screen candidates. And problem is that they were able to see that people at Amazon that were more successful were named Jared, read Harry Potter, and played lacrosse. Problem is, none of that's job relevant at all. You know, we've seen things in the past where, oh, certain postal codes have longer tenure. So in order to reduce churn, they're going to favor certain postal codes. So they had economic impacts. So the point of this, and that's why I keep bringing back the industrial organizational psychology, is that there's real science about what predicts success. And if you follow those best practices and you follow behavior, what you learn and how we've designed it is that it ensures that there's no adverse impact. And that's the key. There's new legislation that's been around for about 3 years in New York City, and you're seeing it being modeled in Quebec. You're seeing it modeled in California, where they're requiring companies that have any kind of automation in their hiring process have to prove through a third-party audit bias that there's no adverse impact, which means when I gave you the example of Scotiabank and somebody being a 45 match for a financial analyst but a 95 for commercial banking, that there isn't any protected group that disproportionately is being given lower scores and other ones being high scores. And this comes down to personality. There are small, small differences between men and women, and you may even see small differences between different geographies. But the way that it gets calculated is it's not a one-to-one, you're good or bad at this. It's a mixture. It's like baking a cake. A combination of ingredients go into saying, are you a good fit for this role or not? That combination eliminates any of those small highs and lows so that overall there's no adverse impact on a particular group because of the way it was designed. So the short answer is personality, cognitive ability, and then the mixture of how it's matched to a role, all of that has ensured that there's no adverse impact. And then we have that checked by a third party. And then there's other things. Again, creating a company that was designed, you know, our background is helping students with learning disabilities. We've taken a lot of care of ensuring that accessibility has been front and center, a lot of care, you know, women-led business. Like, we've really, really cared about making sure that all of this is incredibly defensible. And then we work with international financial institutions that have huge compliance regulations. So we've made this a top priority, and it's something that we really are grateful that we've designed it to avoid these problems from day one. And we really benefit from that.
Yeah, it sounds like that has been a very intentional approach then, because yes, I have heard that before where you start using AI and that type of thing, that whoever built it can build in their own biases. So thanks for sharing that.
Caitlin, where's the name come from? I love Plum, so.
Thank you. So the concept is if you add a B to it, like in England, a plum is a plum fit or a plum candidate, plum job. So that's kind of the heart of it. But I have to give credit that when we were starting out, we had a different name. We were called Cream and then Cream HR, like cream of the crop. And we knew that name was not serving us. And so we went through a full branding exercise, and we completely had an amazing entrepreneur in residence at a Communitech, Alan Corey, who happened to be the chairman of the board of Corey Communications, who was BlackBerry's leading agency. And so they really knew what they were doing, and at no cost, just really took us through a proper exercise. And Alan became one of our first angel investors. He's really been a huge champion, and I'm very grateful that he just, again, saw potential in us and really helped us nail the name. And there's been no looking back since we changed it. This was years ago.
It's a great name. You know, one of the things I chat with a lot of entrepreneurs about, you know, you said you have a co-founder. If we're looking 1, 3, and 5 years out, how do you define success with what you're doing?
I think for us, it's scale. The biggest thing is that we have a product that works. We have ridiculous amounts of evidence at this point that it can scale globally. We're in 140 countries, 50,000 people a month complete their Plum profile. People love taking it. But now it's about how do we have a bigger impact? How do we scale? And a big part of that is the awareness, letting people know that they can do things differently, that they don't have to be stuck with these broken ways of measuring people historically. And so for us, it's about scaling that awareness, scaling the number of customers, scaling the amount of use cases, and really unlocking more opportunities. I was at the HRPA summit last week, and one of the most effective or the most touching kind of talks that I heard was really talking about how you need to be using something in a new way to see the new opportunities of how it can be used more and more. And I think generative AI is changing the workforce, and I want Plum to be critical data that is part of the center of how we navigate how to do things differently and better. And so success is that we're helping redefine how we are putting humans in the center of what we're doing and really seeing success with it being a human-led experience at work.
You were at the HRPA in Toronto?
I was.
Okay. Well, a big shout out to our friend Jody Kovitz, because her and her team knocked it out of the park. What an event. It was a great day. So 1,000 people there during the days. It was hard to touch base with everyone that you wanted to see. So unfortunately, we didn't run into each other there, but it was a great event.
Jody is absolutely incredible. You'll see the little gift that we got as part of the Leaders Lab, our HRPA.
Wow, nice.
Little card holder that I use as my quasi wallet. Yeah, that conference was exceptional. And what high degree of quality being delivered in Canada, and really great thought leaders. So it was an amazing event. And I was really excited to be included.
Yeah, same for us. Well, we're at the point in the episode where Al has a signature question. So if you're up for it, I'd love for Al to throw that at you and see what you have to say.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've already heard a little bit about what you're doing on the professional side, but maybe you want to expand on that, or maybe there's something on the personal side that you want to share. So the question is this: a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So through Plum, you're reshaping how organizations unlock potential and embrace inclusivity. So what proverbial trees are you planting today to ensure a brighter, more equitable future for talent management? Or again, maybe there's something on the personal side that you want to share.
Well, when I started Plum, I really knew that I needed this data in order to be an effective leader, in order for me to do my job and to hire the right people and grow them and run a successful business. But now I have a 13-year-old and 9-year-old. And when they join the workforce, I don't care if they're doctors, lawyers, teachers, nurses. I just want them to be happy, fulfilled, and thrive. And I'm building Plum because I want them to have that future where they're flourishing. And when I look at other people in the workforce, I want that for them and for their kids. I really think that there's an opportunity to redefine work for the better for all of us.
That's great. It goes back to that. If you're going to be at work, you might as well enjoy it, right? You spend so much time there. It becomes so much part of your life. So why not feel the best about it and get the best out of it?
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Again, a big shout out to our good friend, Jason Putnam, for such an amazing introduction. Again, just confirms my theory. Really good people know other really good people. For listeners interested in learning more about what you're doing at Plum or you personally, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Plum.io. Please reach out. You can complete your own free Plum profile right off the website. It's completely free to individuals. So go and figure out what your top talents are and reach out and say hi.
Excellent. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or rejoining the conversation on LinkedIn. I think we saw it pretty clearly today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.